how many times I've been over it. Okay, at the bottom, page 263, and the second column, we notice this, and I'm going to back up just a little bit to the first paragraph. The usual trio should have been priest, Levite, and Jew, or Israelite. But the substitution of a Samaritan was a masterstroke. Now, I think he's using this word masterstroke as of an artist in painting a picture, and he makes a certain stroke, and maybe you don't know what it is, so momentarily you look at it and you see how it blends in and makes sense out of a whole thing that you never once dreamed of was there. And Jesus, having told his superb story, asked a direct question of the lawyer in reply to his question: who is my neighbor? Now, we need this question today, brethren. Our people, church members, need this question today. We are so prone to say, well, who is your neighbor? Well, we consider the ones who live closest to us. And I'd be very apt to say, well, the grievings on one side and the Wasseners on the other side. But now, wait a minute. We are more than neighbors, especially of the Wasseners, because she is constantly watching after us. Not only did she watch after us, but you read the little article that I had tipped out of the paper down here about Shelley, his wife. When Brother Reed had his heart surgery, she'd look over there and see him doing something he had no business doing. She'd holler at him and maybe go over there and take over the job. And she actually keeps our gutter swept clean in front of ours, but on in front of hers. I mean, all those things. And so, actually, we are her neighbor because Lois is just not able to do those things, don't you see? And she does that, keeps the yard cleaned up, and sometimes the kids come over, can we help you put your garbage out? Or Shelley comes over, same thing. All right. Now then, if we could get into the thinking of our people, who is your neighbor? Who do you know? Or whom do you know that needs some help? Some help that you could render. All right? And so, in effect, Jesus gave the lawyer his question back again, calling upon him to decide who was the true neighbor to the man who fell among thieves. What else could the lawyer say but he that showed mercy of him? Then Jesus drove home the application, "Go and do thou likewise," which in effect meant, "Do thou in like manner show mercy, and thou wilt by this means become neighbor to him whom thou showest." Now, this sequel to the moral of the parable was to show that the divine command of loving our neighbor as ourself is fulfilled by the assiduous endeavor to help the needy without asking first who is he and in what relation he stands to us. The Samaritan proved himself to be neighborly, for true neighborliness reveals itself in mercy. Now, I am repeating something I'm sure that you've heard me tell before, but it'll bear repeating. Dr. Bogard used to hammer this into us boys. Somebody's in need. you'll hear somebody else say, well, why don't you check up on him and see if he's worthy? Brother Bogard said, the Bible didn't say anything about checking up on him, see if he's worthy.
No investigation.
And he said, for instance, I've got around $1,800 on my books. I've helped people in need. And later they got to in position that they could have repaid me and should have really done so. But he says it didn't. He said, I'm not worried about it. He says, that's my bank account when I come to need. All right? I believe he lived 4 years after becoming pastor emeritus of Antioch Church. The church went right on paying him $150 a month. He was a man who knew how to live on a little amount of money. He always taught us, as you watch your pennies, the nickels and dimes and dollars will take care of themselves. One morning as he was coming to school, he came by one of the students' houses, Brother A.J. Wall, who is Wichita, Kansas. You all see him, the association, no doubt. And lo and behold, he lifted up the garbage can, and there were the heels of two heels of a loaf of bread been thrown in there. He came right down to school and gave those boys a good lecture on taking care and using what they had. Now, frankly, as far as I'm concerned, in toast, I'd rather have the heel, as they call it, toasted than to have the other slice of bread. Now, that was the kind of man he was. So, he lived well on that $150. And then after he died, church continued to pay that to Sister Bogard. Brother Foreman, who was the pastor, would take the check, cash it. He'd go around and pay the bills for Sister Bogard and put the balance in the bank for her. All right, when she died, they found out that they had made no plans to put they left no money to put a monument to their grave. And yet he gave away a fortune in his closing days of life. I've heard him say it many times that I got one son, he's in the Navy. He says, he's got no business inheriting what I've got. He don't have to live as long as he lives because he'll get a pension. So that's the way he looked at things. Well, he was taken care of in his needy days. And what little money had been banked by Brother Foreman was made known to us in a meeting one time at Antioch Church that there's no money left for the monument to their graves. Brother Foreman reported about this little amount he had. Well, all of us had the privilege of donating money that put the monument to Brother and Sister Bogard's grave. All right, now who's my neighbor? He proved, don't you see, I improved us, all and whoever heard him tell that and know the story, knows that truth of that thing by the fact that it actually happened. Now then, the Samaritan proved himself to be neighborly, for true neighborliness reveals itself in mercy. Now the deep principle of human conduct or philosophy of life which this parable contains for us is the same question of the lawyer. Who is my neighbor? How are we to distinguish our neighbor? Cosmo Lang says, be in your spirit neighborly, and then every man will be your neighbor without distinction of race or religion. That man is our neighbor who has need of us. It is not place, but love that makes a neighborhood.
Yeah.
The question is not so much who is my neighbor, but am I neighborly? We look upon our neighbors as those who live next door to us, but we are they may be most unneighborly, and we find it easier to love and help those at a distance than one's actual neighbor. Yet these are our neighbors in connection with the keeping of the Passover is the enactment. If the household be too little for the lamb, let him and his neighbor next unto his house take it according to the number of souls. Exodus 12 and 4. Says Habershon, and incidentally, this is a lady writer, but she has an excellent book on the parables as well as on the miracles, since they go together. Our neighbor is one with whom we may share the lamb. We have neighbors on both sides, those who are saved, those who are unsaved, those to whom we can offer succor, those with whom we can hold fellowship. But I don't know whether I mentioned this yesterday morning or not. The other day, before yesterday in the office, a piece of mail came to Brother Waymire's desk. Director of the Handicapped. He says, am I that? Fits the waste paper back. I said, wait a minute. Because that fitted right in with what I was going to use. And what it is, one of the universities here in California has a computer system that is well adapted to operation by handicapped people. And I've got that filed away at home just to use to illustrate. In it, there are a number of cards. You know of somebody who needs a job, who needs the training, this is open for them. And I happen to know that, now just how it is today, I don't know, but I know two people who did there when they were working, for instance, Brother Bobby Avery's wife. Studied computer, and she worked at that until, well, even after she married, she worked a while. And while Brother, the president of the school had been in Oregon when he was down here going to school, he worked over here at General Motors in the computer department there. However they did to make each part that would go with the other part to build a certain car that was there on the assembly line. Well, now that's the thing, you see, trying to see to those who are in need somehow. All right. But the teaching of our Lord parable is that nearness does not make neighborliness. As Buttrick expressed it, the priest and Levite were near both by race and by office, and the Samaritan by race and office was remote. People may have divided only by a narrow wall and yet not be neighbors. People may live with no intervening wall and yet not be neighbors. Only the eyes and the spirit of the Samaritan makes neighborliness. As we take our journey through life, those we come upon by chance who are in dire need of help, spiritual, physical, or material, these are our neighbors. The great, good Samaritan himself would have us assist. A final word is necessary regarding the various applications of this choice parable. Now, remember this, you can make applications from parables. But when you are making applications, you make the people understand that you are making application and not interpretation. But as a rule, try in your preaching to interpret first. Let that be your main line of preaching, is interpretation. And secondarily, application. In our introductory action on the interpretation of parables, we mentioned the most fanciful treatment of the parable by Augustine, one which is extended somewhat by Keach. Now, I have Keach metaphors and parables, and incidentally, Keach was a Baptist preacher of England back a few generations ago. But apart from far-fetched allegorical interpretation, there is a legitimate application of the parable. Did not God make humanity his neighbor? Seeing a world of sinners robbed of their true natures, stripped of divine ideals, wounded by sins, unable to rise, God came down in the incarnation to where the sinner was, and he suffered, tempted in all points, like as we are, yet without sinning. All right, and gave the world a corresponding example in act of the merciful Samaritan. Christ, through his death and resurrection, covers our nakedness, binds up our wounds, and heals them with a balm extracted from his own broken heart. Not only so, but he puts us in a place of safety, provides for our needs, and has promised to return and take us to himself. Thus, the parable is radiant with the beauty of the gospel of Christ as an application, who in his life and death kept all the injunction given in this perilous parable. Now then, you're going to say, what in the world are you pulling this little book out for this morning? Here's what this is. Any of you ever heard of these being used back under a generation two, I guess, at least, in school? Sir?
They got a lot of them out now.
Yeah, they're being spread around pretty good. Okay. I was reading this. Now, let me ask, tell you why this is of direct interest to me. For instance, my dad had a first cousin who had an eighth grade education, yet he was certified to teach public school and was very successful in public school. I used to wonder how in the name of sense could a man just with an eighth grade education be a school teacher.
Mm-hmm. My boy was talking about one real very brilliant boy in his class a couple of weeks ago, and I said, son, do you realize that when I was going to school, we were expected to know much of this kid? You know, he was a bit, he stood out from the other children because he knew the president of the United States, and he knew the state, the capital, all of this. The things that we had to do. We didn't know those things when I was a child. We didn't think.
You're right.
And he wrote the preamble to the Constitution. Boy, he was smart.
Yeah. All right. Now then, I used to wonder when I was, I wonder now that when I was a child, I saw unchurched people, more or less, in the community. Never made a profession of faith or anything, but there was more neighborliness practice, more biblical principle practice in the community than we find today among our churches. And there's been a question mark in my mind a long time. Why was it? Where did they get their information? They never had more than quarter time preaching back then. Usually that is on Sunday morning, and it wasn't easy for everybody to go and this, that. I wonder where they got it. Then one time it dawned on me, evidently it must have been some of the material that was used for subject matter in their public schools. All right, yesterday the Lord showed me this. The golden rule, to act with integrity and good faith, was such a habit with Susan that she had never before thought of examining the golden rule. All things whatsoever ye would that men should do to you, do ye even so to them. But the longer she reflected upon it, the stronger was her conviction that she did not always obey this precept. At length she appealed to her mother for its meaning. It implies, said her mother, in the first place, a total destruction of all selfishness. For a man who loves himself better than his neighbors can never do to others as he would have others to do to him. We are bound not only to do but to feel toward others as we would have others feel toward us. Remember, it is much easier to reprove the sin of others than it is to overcome temptation when it assails ourselves. A man may be perfectly honest and yet very selfish, but the command implies something more than mere honesty. It requires charity as well as integrity. The meaning of the command is fully explained in the parable of the Good Samaritan. The Levite who passed by the wounded man without offering him assistance may have been a man of great honesty, but he did not do unto the poor stranger as he would have wished others to do unto him. Susan pondered carefully and seriously on what her mother had said. Then she thought over her past conduct. A blush of shame crept into her cheeks and a look of sorrow into her eyes as many little acts of selfishness and unkindness came back to her remembrance. She resolved that for the future, both in great things and small, she would remember and follow the golden rule. It was not long after this that an opportunity occurred of trying Susan's principle. One Saturday evening, when she went, as usual, to Farmer Thompson's Inn to receive the price of her mother's washing for the boarders, which amounted to $5, she found the farmer in the stable yard. He was apparently in a terrible rage with some horse dealers with whom he had been bargaining. He held in his hand an open pocketbook full of bills, and scarcely noticing the child as she made her request, except to swear at her, as usual, for troubling him when he was so busy, he handed her a banknote. Glad to escape so easily, Susan hurried out of the gate, and then pausing to pin the money safely in the folds of her shawl, she discovered that he had given her two bills instead of one. She looked around. Nobody was near to share her discovery, and her first impulse was joy at the unexpected prize. "It is mine and all mine," said she to herself. "I will buy mother a new cloak with it, and she can give her old one to Sister Mary, and then Mary can go to Sunday school with me next winter. I wonder if it will not buy a pair of shoes for Brother Tom, too." At that moment, she remembered that he must have given it to her by mistake, and therefore she had no right to it. But again, the voice of the tempter whispered, "He gave it, and how do you know that he did not intend to make you a present of it? Keep it. He will never know it, even if it should be a mistake. For he had too many such bills in that great pocketbook to miss one." While this conflict was going on in her mind between good and evil, she was hurrying homeward as fast as possible. Yet before she came in sight of her home, she had repeatedly balanced the comforts which the money would buy against the sin of wronging her neighbor. As she crossed the little bridge over the narrow creek before her mother's door, her eye fell upon a rustic seat which they had occupied during the conversation I have before narrated. Instantly the words of Scripture, "Whatsoever ye would that men should do to you, do ye even so to them," sounded in her ears like a trumpet. Turning her suddenly around, as if flying from some unseen peril, the child hastened along the road with breathless speed until she found herself once more at Farmer Thompson's gate. "What do you want now?" asked the gruff old fellow as he saw her again at his side. "Sir, you paid me 2 bills instead of 1, said she, trembling in every limb. "2 bills? Did I? Let me see." "Well, so I did. But did you just find it out? Why did you not bring it back sooner?" Susan blushed and hung her head. "You wanted to keep it, I suppose," said he. "Well, I'm glad your mother was more honest than you, or I should have been $5 poorer and none the wiser." "My mother knows nothing about it, sir," said Susan. "I brought it back before I went home." The old man looked at the child, and as he saw the tears rolling down her cheeks, he seemed touched by her distress. Putting his hand in his pocket, he drew out a shilling and offered it to her. "No, sir, I thank you," sobbed she. "I do not want to be paid for doing right. I only wish you would not think me dishonest, for indeed it was a sore temptation." "Oh, sir, if you had ever seen those you love best wanting the common comforts of life, you would know how hard it is for us always to do unto others as we would have others do unto us." The heart of the selfish man was touched. There be things which are little upon the earth, but they are exceeding wise," murmured he, as he bade the little girl good night and entered his house, a sadder, and it is to be hoped, a better man. Susan returned to her humble home with a lightened heart, and through the course of a long and useful life, she never forgot her first temptation. Now then, there's some of the material, don't you see, that was used a couple of generations ago that helped. All right, now I want you to just notice down here at the bottom of this now, they give definitions: integrity, honesty, upright, conviction, strong belief, appeal, referred to, temptation, that which has a tendency to induce one to do wrong, assails, attacks, conflict, a struggle, balance, weighed, compared, gruff, rough. 17, murmured, spoke in a low voice. Lightened, made cheerful or lighted. Then it goes on with some exercise. What is the golden rule? What does it imply? How can a man be perfectly honest and still not follow the golden rule? What parable is a perfect illustration of the meaning? How was Susan tempted? What did she first think of doing? What changed her intention? Relate what happened when she returned the money. What effect did her action have? Now, those are questions for class discussion after they had read this lesson. Now, don't you see how the material of the lesson was based in the Scriptures, the truth, and then words that were used in that, a discussion of the word, so that they could thoroughly understand the thing. Now then, I think some of the questions that have been in my mind a long time have been answered. Now, John Dewey, who is the father of the progressive educational system, is quoted to have made the statement that subject matter is of no importance in school. It's just something to get people to do so they'll do it together. And that togetherness was what he was trying to do. And the point was this. It is directly opposite to the true meaning of education. Education comes to us basically from the word enduo, and the suffix there, T-I-O-N, means the act of. Enduo means to draw out the potentials of a personality or of a person. So education is the act not of trying to control that individual in a brainwashing situation, but to draw out the potentialities, the act of drawing out the potentialities of that person. Now, since we are creatures of God, there is a moral element with every last one of us, conscience, and so on. Now, you can see there how a lot of people back yonder when I was a kid still practice things today that they won't do. Now, I use that to just show you the practicalities of the truth back of this parable.
You know, actually, today I doubt very seriously 10% of fourth graders can read
this. You're right. All right. Now, this lets us see, brother. Now, this parable that we have studied. Who is my neighbor? One who stands in need of something I can do for him, or join with others helping to do for him.
You've been up the interstate by going toward Oakland at Bakersfield, about 7 miles from Gorman, about 1 a.m. in the morning. My car just come to a stop, find all the light, you know, it just went dead. And about an hour later, a neighbor came home, driving a little Pinto, pulling a trailer, he and his wife and kids. And Lord, grabbed my wife, he backed all the way back as he could, back in that trailer, and got out and walked. He said, maybe your cable is, I'm a mechanic today. And he took my post, I cleaned my cable, and put it back to Lord about that. He said, well, I'm going to Gorman. He wants me to, I'll send somebody back from Gorman. Else I'll take you to Gorman. I said, I think I'll go down there with you. So I locked the car and got on there. And I said, well, how much I owe you? He said, oh, you don't owe me nothing. Never seen him before in my life. I've never seen him again. But that was my name.
Yeah. Right.
And I knew somebody was going to stop. Even though those trucks would almost blow me off of that bridge route.
Yeah.
You know, it's a danger. I'm glad it happened to me. Brother, I've never been up in that road drive without bogged down like that, broke down. But brother, even with all those lights past you, you can see alligators.
And so, now this very story right here of the Good Samaritan, whether somebody made up that story or to use this material or it was an experience, we don't particularly care, but it gives us an actual thing that could have happened in life and how this parable of Good Samaritan, do unto others as you would have them to do unto you. The practitioners of religion didn't do it. But we find the Good Samaritan did. If you remember, I called your attention yesterday that while Jesus was both man and God, as man, he understands man. And so there he was practicing that is true. Illustrated right there. So it shows to you and me today. Well, it's like I tried to present day before yesterday. I don't know while it's successful or not. Well, two responded after just on their own of what it meant. Now, what I was trying to do, I had a whole stack of stuff. My wife says, how in the name of sense are you going to use all that in that class this morning? I said, well, I want to. But what it was, I had material here to show what a preacher could have or what the church could have in its library, sources of help for people who are helpless, as this man was helpless. And there is actually, I think, too much of this today. If I can get so-and-so over here into the church, he'll be a great help to us. That's the wrong idea. What can we do to help that helpless person, or help that person in that helpless situation, and things like that? And we're too prone a lot of times to, just as I think I mentioned yesterday, you know, a place I know where preacher's trying to build his church solely for the young people. Sure, we want the young people in, but when the people get a little older and so on, are they no good? Is the church to minister to them in no way? And so on. It's a lifelong proposition. I remember Brother L.D. Foreman, I believe it was, he pastored the church of Sheridan, Arkansas one time. And every Christmas, the Sheridan church would make up boxes to give to the elderly people around over the country. It didn't make any difference whether they were church members or not. And so Brother Foreman said he went into a house, and an old man there, kind of gruff like this one here, and, what you got there? So he told him, where'd it come from? Well, First Baptist Church of Sheridan. Lord, he lit in on this one, that, and the other one was a Christian, and what he did, and all this, that, and the other, that was so un-Christian, this, that, and the other. Brother Foreman said, all of that's true, but what about Jesus Christ? That stopped the man right there, don't you see? And so, all of those things are valuable lessons for us today. Now, let me